Dhamma friends, we are going to have a Dhamma talk. As a consent, everyone give the consent as telling three times sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Cittavatan ko auso bhikkhuno dasanam suvisiddham hoti iti. Yeah, Dhamma friends, now we are in the second day of our retreat. So whenever we are going to have this kind of a residential retreat, it's one way of facilitating the retreat by giving a formal Dhamma talk. This is to rather give a theoretical understanding or a book knowledge regarding the practice. And usually what happens is, in a conventional situation, we take a discourse delivered by the Buddha during his contemporary time and recorded then by heart and kept as the canon. We usually take a particular discourse and take it as the topic and then try to understand that particular discourse with the commentarial understanding and our practical knowledge, so that we make it a point to get some theoretical understanding, book knowledge. As far as this retreat is concerned, we have selected one particular discourse known as Kinsuka Sutta. And if you are interested in finding the original source, you can go to the Sanghita Nikaya, Condensed Teaching of the Buddha. It's a book number 4. The English rendering of that Kinsuka Sutta is given as the riddle tree. There's a Buddha towards the end of the particular sutta, in order to answer this paradoxical situation, question, the Buddha excited the kind of a tree. That is the Pali name is that Kinsu. Therefore, in the translation space, the rendering for this discourse goes as the riddle tree. That, of course, we will come across towards the end of the discourse, but today we are going to give the start. As far as the start is concerned, or as far as the today's topic is concerned, Kittavatana ko auso bhikkhuno dasana suvisiddham hoti, that is the Pali term. If someone needs to translate that particular Pali question, to what extent, my friend, is a monk's vision said to be well purified? This is, if I am to go back to the history or the background, case history, during the time of the Buddha, while he was dwelling in Savatthi, near the Jeta Grove, one monk, meditative monk, a disciple of the Buddha, come across a question, and what is the well-purified vision. But he was not in a position to comprehend it, therefore he consults yet another bhikkhu, another meditative monk, and asks, to what extent, my friend, is the monk's vision said to be well purified? So this is a question not much related with our sensuous gratification. This is rather philosophical or spiritual kind of a question. So in the first instant, if you are going to accept this as a valid question, we have to get into the key term, the vision, the view. How much is our view is well purified? That vision here by understanding the context it indicates, it is not the visual vision we are getting out of our carnal eye. It is rather regarding the views in our mind or in our philosophy. As far as the carnal eye, or vision, or seeing is concerned, we take it as the first and foremost sensuous organ in order to maximize our pleasure or to get our security, food, and all the kind of things. So therefore, we value our eye as well as our vision, our seeing. And that is the what giving the maximum amount of sensuous impingements within a day as well as we are awake. So even then, this particular question, if we are related to our carnal eye, just mere physical seeing is concerned, it indicates even if we are looking and seeing, our vision, our scenery that we are seeing is not much purified. So therefore, this particular monk is asking, if I am to put into the simple English, is that what we see exist, or can we see what is existing? This is completely paradoxical. Of course, we are in our classrooms and the studies and in our so-called worldly knowledge, we have taken that into grant. What we see exists. What we exist is the one we see. But if it is so, there is no question like this. But this question indicates there are something which we have, even we are looking into, we can't see. And there are something exists. Whatever the method, carnal eye or in the visual, in the mental eye, we can't see. Under such circumstances, how we can relate these two, the looking and seeing and our view? So this is, of course, a spiritual question. It's, of course, a philosophical question, religious question. So, therefore, we have to validate. We have to understand it's a valid question, even though it is not happening in our day-to-day life as far as sensuous gratification is concerned. But anyone who thinks further of beyond that, one can see within our short span of life, we see so much of knowledge, so much of viewpoints, so much of ideas and purification of view in terms of the microscopes and telescopes and binoculars and spectacles and all the kind of thing happen. But the world is day by day ramification, with the, entangled with this ramification, leading to more and more chaos, leading to more and more tension, leading to more and more stress, leading to more and more neurosis. So if our vision is being clarified day by day, they should have a kind of a lead toward the clarity, towards the well-being. But we definitely know more and more to develop so-called the worldly, political, social and economic development is concerned, more and more it is leading to not towards the well-being of a particular person or the climate or the planet, but other ways the truth. Individuals, number of individuals in the so-called civilized society, one-tenth of the population is mentally ill, according to the Western psychology. And if you see the number of development or developed cities, what is the most increase in development is number of beds in the asylums. They were increasing. Number of the police, number of armies, and still the problems are increasing. So therefore, whatever we see, we even at the time of the Buddha, and it's more true up to date, not will purify. But being and leaving it as a spiritual quest or religious thing or philosophical, and still we are chasing behind that is so-called seeing and looking into the development, productivity, creativity, and same trend, one can predict more and more you to see, more and more you to look into, more and more you leading into the more and more chaos. It's a chaotic situation. More and more frustration. More and more tension, mental and physical. So therefore, this question that monk raised is valid. So when we are studying and going, penetrating deep into the sutta, the particular discourse, there is yet another spiritual question arising. Even though we take a turn, take a cut to the spirituality as to purify our vision, there are a number of alternative answers we come across that particular monk who's inquiring. But he is not happy with the single. But all the answers are very profound. Spiritually, well balanced. Profound. And then he keep on asking. That indicates, even if you are given with a particular formula, particular answer, that particular person as a sentient being, he has no way to verify it. So as far as he or she do not have the verification, the method of verification is still the vacuum, still the entertainment of doubts, still the keep on questioning is going. So now another question, that was first and foremost thing is, can we see what is existing, and does existing thing be in a visual sphere, is a separate one. And understanding and accepting this question, and if the answer is given, even if it is profound and even if it is justifiable, still that particular person keep on asking because he is not sure, he can't verify. So that is the way, that is the complexity of the situation, paradoxical situation. So we take this as a case study for something happened during the time of the Buddha. But when and where we are going to apply to oneself, how much it is applicable. Otherwise, we are just doing this retreat and learning Buddhism and everything for the sake of learning. There is no application. So this talk, or series of talk, we try to see how much we are also in the same paradox. We people got together under this very same roof, definitely by our own rights, we came to know the way of the worldling's pursuit, going search of under the pleasure principle, is not the final goal. Another part we know, without that we can't live also. So therefore we are ready to moderate, or ready to compromise with our sensuous gratification, and meanwhile give certain amount of emphasis, certain amount of time allocation to understand the spiritual quest, the religious one. And there are different religions and religious people come out a number of ways, number of way out. Everything is spiritual. But the beginner do not know which one is the correct one, and sure and sure. And that depends on the verification, verifiability. The system is very capitalistic. Those who reach, they can verify, they are well off. Those who are still searching, they have no verification, a lot of alternatives are there, no limited time they have, limited knowledge they have, limited raw material they have. So the spirituality itself is creating attention, creating unsatisfactoriness, creating something lacking. But throughout this 2600 years, there are no concrete answer for this question. So therefore you have to run a risk. Or in another way, you have to say, only way, one method of way out, that is trial and error. So, of course, in a meditation, meditative life, you have to, right from the beginning, you have to understand, no sure assurance for that. Nothing in the world there is, we can call there is assurance. The lack of assurance itself is the suffering. That's the universal. Irrespective of the time and the space, or time dimension or space dimension, that uncertainty, no certainty, it's a fact. So therefore, right from the beginning, at the outset, you have to have this mindset. As far as you are not spiritual, as far as you are not religious, as far as you are not going to take these philosophical quests, you think there are certainty, the notion of permanence. Upon that only we have theorems and the formulas and the methods and the constitutions and all the kind of things. But nothing, in no theorem, no formula, no constitution going to give a lasting answer. So therefore, ultimate is boiled down to particular person, let us say I am, or myself, what is the way out? If you are going to find a way out on large scale, society at large, you are utterly at a loss. So therefore, when and where you are going to boil down the situation to oneself and going to give a serious effort, still with the trial and error. And then that very outlook, everyone will criticize, telling that you are very selfish, you are unsocial, are going backward, and you are criticizing everything productive and creative, and therefore that particular person, right from the beginning, get outcasted from the society at large. He'll be cornered. So this is the extrovert phenomena. But if you put into oneself that when and where a youth going to take the spiritual quest and meditation, mendicants, whatever may be, amount of thoughts arising within an hour, within a day, how much is for the meditation and how much is against the meditation, exactly the same externally or internally. Once in a way we are urged, we are pushed toward the spiritual thing, but when such one thought happens, 1001 thoughts happen, how to gratify our sensuous pleasure. How to chase behind the pressure principle. So it's an internal also fight, a war. External also it's a war. So therefore, even though you become a meditator, there is no peace. Still the irritation is increasing. Of course, I would say your self-criticism will increase. Your fault-finding status will be increased. And still you will try to expect the world has to run according to the letter and everything it must be, why it is in chaotic life. So from the beginning you have to understand why this kind of a background arises, how that one can phrase this question, how one can develop the well-purified vision. It's valid. Theoretically, yes. And soon you're going to deal with it. Never you are going to get a assuring answer or certainty at the beginning. So therefore you have to sacrifice. You have to start with trial and error. And after a certain extent, once you develop a certain amount of spiritual qualities only, you develop little bit of verifiability. Up to that point, it is running a risk. But even this is the situation, the Buddha to be, he went forth and started with all the available conventional method, and ultimately he found they were not directly helpful, but invariably in an informal way they were helpful. Ultimately, it happened him to assimilate the special technique, special way, midst of all the uncertainties to cut through the jungle and go and find a verifiability, and ultimately with that verifiability to give a lasting peace. So when that particular monk go and ask this question from the other monk as to what is the way and what extent vision can be well purified, the other monk says, yathokova uso bhikkhu channam passayatanana samudhyantya attangamancha yathabhutam pajanati yathavatasukova uso That's an answer which is done for you. The other one says as an answer, oh my friend, as far as you can see the very arising and passing away of all these contact bases, six bases, so much so I would define that your vision is purified. That is not what you look through your eye, that is talking about your mental eye. When and where the contact going to happen, the touch, as far as the body is concerned, the touch. But when the contact going to happen, there are six sense doors or tactile faculties. Eye is one. It is taking responsibility about the visual objects. Contacts regarding the visual objects, shapes and the colors. And the eardrum, the sensitivity of the ear, is going to take the responsibility regarding the sound waves, listening. And the nose, olfactory, going to take about transactions regarding the smells, good and bad. As well as the taste buds at your tongue, take responsibility about the contacts regarding the tastes. And the body, tactile sensation. The faculty of mind, other dhamma aspects, mental aspects, and when and where are the seeing going to start and going to cease to exist? When and where are the sound or listening going to start and cease to exist? When and where are the smelling going to start and cease to exist? When and where are the tasting, any kind of starting and cease to exist? Contact. Starting and ceases to exist, and the mental aspects together with the mind, how to start and what is the right from the beginning to the middle to the end. If you can manage to see it, more and more you try, your vision will be more purified, or you can say broad aspect. Your view will be wider. It's called vice. So this is what we in the Singhalese talk yesterday, we tried to go into little detail with the little bit of understanding we have, experience, direct touch we have, how this meditation instruction leading to see, or one to see, how one leads to see the right from the beginning of a phenomena, right from the beginning of an incident or experience, and to continue through the middle to the last drop. How we are going to achieve it. So let us go back to the basic instructions whereby whenever such a spiritual quest, spiritual journey starts, the Buddha says there should have a internal and external conducive conditions. Or in the sense, to conduct its research, you should have a facilitated laboratory. Without that, you can't. So he prescribed out of his, under the Lord's experience, the forest is the well-equipped, fully facilitated laboratory, so better to go into a forest. Or he found the vibration under a tree, it's very nice, so therefore he told, otherwise, if it is difficult to go under a tree. For the last, you have to go to a solitude place, the place free from beings, searching, sensuous pleasure. So So nowadays we have three kinds of meditation. Atmospheres, some people directly become a forest monks and go into the trees, forest, leave the whole time that we call the renunciation, conventional renunciation, and they find that is the maximum they can do for their own well-being. So they go to the forest. So when and where others possible, they go under the trees, maybe part-time, at least give a certain amount of time, certain amount of other valuable things to just sit under a tree and use this atmosphere. The least one is this one. This is called, we come to a place, we make sure we are not coming here to gratify sensuous pleasure, not on the pleasure-seeking game or pleasure principle, and we try to keep away as much as possible that kind of a sensuous beings. People searching behind the senses, sense pleasure. So this goes unyanga. So once you come to here, place like this, then one thing assuring is that your solitude. You can do away with your dear and near ones, and you can do away with your lay responsibilities, and come here, and you can mind your own business. That is, in a sense, kind of a solitude. So we can say this is a kind of a freedom also, and kind of a peace of mind on the physical point of view. But even then, these six sense doors, six contact bases, are working at the rate, even though we are in a busy multitasking outside job or household work, chorus. But when you come to a center like this, even though you achieve this external atmosphere, but internally, mind is just like a fish out of water. It's working like anything. So because our mind is not trained to us. It is always searching about the varietal entertainment. Our houses are full of vision, full of sound, full of smells, full of foods, full of luxuries. And we, our mind has been so trained, why we say ill-trained, jumping from one to the other, no agenda. You don't know. You can't follow it. You can't keep books. You can't do bookkeeping from morning to evening. Try at least 5 minutes. Can you bookkeep about the, if you trace the mind? No. You can't predict what is going to happen in the next moment. How the mind is jumping, whether it's you become a seer or hearer or person smelling or tasting or searching comfort or thinking, you don't know. As far as it is imbibed and filled with so much of sensuous objects, impingements and the facilities, you feel mind is very calm and quite at home, no problem. But when and where you come to a forest or under a tree or sit in a cushion, then only you start to see the real fight. Then only the fish come out of the water, or a wild buffalo taken out of the wilderness and put in a civilized place with a well-driven pig and tied into with a good rope, and what kind of a fighting going to happen. So when that happens, you can understand more than peace of mind, more than calming down, more than one-pointedness, mind becomes so wild. And each and every person, unless otherwise advised, unless otherwise learned, unless otherwise have the book knowledge, unless otherwise they have theoretical knowledge, they consider this bewilderment, unruly nature as my own weakness. I am not a virtuous person. I don't have enough moral restraint, not enough sila. That is why my mind is jumping and everyone personally brooding about his or her weakness, and that itself become a reason to be tensed, reason to be more frustrated. But the theoretically you have to understand this is not your personal mistake. You understand the human mind, this is the way human mind is. As far as it is in the wilderness, the wild buffalo is very nice if it treat the wild. Whenever it is taken out of the wilderness, then only the problem. As for the fish is in the water, no problem. When it's taken out, there's a problem. So therefore, soon you go to start with this observation of this six contact bases. That even to start, even come back to the base, the zero level, it's a hell of a difficulty. So therefore, when the Westerners, and now they, of course, they start looking into the way, going back to the spirituality, they say, more you study, more difficult you become to come to the zero. More you reach, you find more difficult to come to zero. More you are healthy, you find more difficult to come to the zero. More you think you are an acute person, very difficult you come to the zero. Therefore, at the first part, it must be a deconstruction process. It's a de-learning process. You have to be humble, come down to earth. That is the most difficult part. Therefore, no one can prescribe another person come and meditate. Because it is a punishment. From the worldly point of view, but that particular person, if he is moved by the utter suffering from morning to evening, or seeing this friction in the world, he or she is making his mind to come and sit, that itself is praiseworthy. That itself is, you must appreciate. So that is the way to understand the profundity of Dhamma, profundity of this trip. So when you come and sit on the cushion, you see, the eye is very happy to have visual contacts. Ear is very happy to have sounds. Nose is waiting for searching for smells. Mouth is for the taste. Body is asking, can I have a better cushion? Can I have a better position to start meditation? Because whatever the posture you go, it is mere crucification. You can see crucified Jesus on the cross. Whatever the posture, that is the face. And you think it's efficient methods, quick formulas, grace of the teacher, blessing of the master, many, 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 many things. Because you can't simply face. Whenever you are going to observe the five, six sense contact bases, so much of difficulties arise. So therefore the Buddha says, I will tell you one thing. At a given time you can't see all the six. So therefore, as far as the six variables are there, you can't do an experiment. Fix as much as possible variables and focus the attention on one easier, more prominent thing. So therefore the Buddha is asking, if you really wish, close your eyes temporarily to cut off the contacts regarding the visual objects. Go to a silent place in order to do away with listening. Select an atmosphere, no matter of perfumes or bad smells. Don't entertain any taste. So now you are left with the body tactile sensation. And give the attention, give the diligence, give the vigilance to this very bodily sensation, and that is we call vigilance, the diligence. And synonyms, yet another one is mindfulness, awareness. So in order to take your awareness, the mindfulness, take your mindfulness, the vigilance, the diligence to your body and be happy with that, you see how much it is difficult to keep the body just simply symmetrical and relaxed on a cushion. As far as you have breakdance, as far as you have the dancing or playing kind of thing, you don't find any difficult to keep the body. It is very happy. But when and where I will keep quiet and in the one symmetrical place, so difficult. And that is not just for the punishment, it is to say, in order to fix four variables, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting. You have to close these faculties and just focus the attention to that. Here, now, I am sitting. So when and where you come up to that experience, I will challenge you. When and where the mind come to here, now I am sitting. If I ask each and everyone to tell me the experience, or articulate your experience, communicate your experience, no words in our vocabulary, whatever the language is. When and where mind come here and now, you can't deny there is no experience. Of course there is experience. There is a phenomenon. But you can't communicate. We can communicate only which is satisfying senses. Sensual gratification, we have number of ways explaining the same thing, so much of communication patterns. But when and where you come to the here and now, our linguists, our language, our grammar, our communication, articulation, all we become dumb bills. But this is the starting the point of the spirituality. When and where you come to the here and now, you feel that the experience is there, but it is difficult to communicate. And if you know how to appreciate it, if you know how to perpetuate it, you are the best. But the thing is, as far as we can communicate, as far as we can share with others, we have the fear. We think it is meaningless. We think it is useless. Because we can't make a commodity out of that. We can't sell it. This whole world is, the whole language is, whole grammar is supply and demand. Whichever maybe you can't communicate, is useless to the sensuous beings. But the Buddha is the beginning, stepping stone to the spirituality. So then you have to have a kind of accommodation, kind of a compromise. Am I going to listen to the Buddha or the theory understanding, or shall I go back to the to make something syllable, commodity, supply and demand, share with others? So this is making a hell of a compromising in the mind. So therefore, as far as you are keeping the mind in the present moment, you will try your best. You will try your best to keep it in the present moment, but you are becoming very difficult to maintain it, very difficult to justify it, very difficult to understand its value unless otherwise you have a fair amount of theory knowledge. We can say it is simply big book knowledge. And you have a fair amount of faith. You have a fair amount of courage. Then only the mindfulness going to stand still. It is like a wick or candle burning. The flame is upright, no cross currents, it is burning upright. Exactly the way whenever the mindfulness to come and understand here, now I am sitting. And to appreciate it, you must have so much of faith, you must have to have so much of energy, you must have so much of listening, and you must have so much of mistake, past mistakes. And without throwing away the mistake, upon your mistake, you have to learn yourself. And this is the starting point. And when and where are you to keep the mind with this contact, the touch, the experience, the phenomena, here, now I am. It is very difficult for a beginner to articulate it, put into words. You don't see them in the books. You never learn them in the classroom. Your teacher do not know. Your parents do not know. That is why they are perpetuating with this pleasure-seeking game. They are very happy that if you are also becoming a part and parcel of this pleasure-seeking game. Pleasure principle. Because they think that is well-being. And the Buddha says, as far as you are doing that, you will become disqualified to this here and now. So therefore, when and where you become qualified to here and now, not to forget about the classroom understanding, it is for worldly knowledge. I'm not telling to throw away, but to keep there in due place and mind your own business. be here and now. And if you are to experience this, even though I mentioned at the beginning it is difficult to articulate, I'll give three hints to verify, to question whether you are in here and now. I would suggest when you come here and now, you will experience that I am not dead. Then verify. Did the mind come to here and now? Otherwise you are understanding you are not dead by listening, hearing, smelling, touching and kind of thing. Now you are experiencing by the present moment, you can say awareness, that awareness then and they are proving, I don't know what way, in what way, that I am not dead. So this is a very good starting point. The second thing is, you can verify you are not sleeping. You are awake. The third thing is, you can verify you are not fainting, not unconscious. And if I am to go further, I would say, even though it is not verifiable, whoever may be, whether it's a male or female, or Buddhist or non-Buddhist, or ordained or non-ordained, when and where they come to the here and now, everyone experiences exactly the same. That is, we can say humanity. This is the human nature. That means mind is back at home. It's very boring. It's very monotonous. It's never, never appreciating. So therefore the person, even if he or she can go there, even if he, she can verify it, they go, for what? We can't sell it. We can't make something out of that. No demand for that. No supply. We can't make commodity out of that. So therefore, even though you go there, it's like a leech go to the beach, feel quite uncomfortable. You can verify, of course, I am here and also what? For what? So that is the problem. So therefore you have to find ways and means, number of ways and means, once you've taken the balance, how to maintain the balance, it is like tightrope walking. It's like the burning of the candle, the candle flame is upward. So how to balance a push bike? The Buddha, out of compassion, he came out with a number of methods, ways and means. Once those who recognize, keep in the mind here and now, or to understand that I am not dead, to understand I am not sleeping, I am not unmindful or unconscious or fainted, then he has to assimilate many, many ways and means to keep that balance. So, when and where are you to keep the mind here and now for longer time, I am taking example of sitting meditation. The same three characteristics, not dead, not sleeping, not unconscious, is applicable to your breath. When and where the mind is associating with the breath, face to face with the breath, it is the life. In Sanskrit it is called prana. In Pali, pāna, 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 apāna. Over there, no? Directly related, I'm just making pun out of words. Pāna, pāna. So when and where you can see the breathing is bare minimum to indicate you are not dead. Understanding of the breath is the bare minimum for you to understand you are not sleeping. The knowing the breath is the bare minimum you can understand you are not unconscious. So the Buddha, out of compassion, he says, when you are under these external and internal facilities, conducive conditions, the breath happens, you say sato asa sati, sato pasa sati. Mindfully, vigilantly, diligently, see this is in-breath, this is out-breath. And that will give a more pragmatic, more practical hint for you to understand how I am here. And you are on the contact of the breath. And you are on the contact of the body. Bodily tactile sensation. So how much you have to facilitate, how much you have to familiarize, how much you have to be friendly, how much you have to be acquainted with the breath, which you have to decide. More and more you go, more and more acquainted with, more and more facility, familiarized with the breath, you will understand the breath has three facets. Maybe I am too technical, but I am giving you hints in order to make sure, verify, the breath has the difference. The first thing is, now I am with the breath, I am not seeing, I am not hearing, I am not smelling, I am not tasting, but I am with the breath, is one indication. That means limited to breath, my attention, mindfulness, diligence, vigilance is breath. And when and it is, when and where it is not breath, that much also you know. I am with sounds, I am with pains, I am with thoughts. And when and where it come back to the breath, it's so one facet. As far as these five, six sense contact places are concerned, the breath, each and according to each and everyone's anatomical situation, has a specific touching point. When the aortum is gushing out or gushing in, it has a particular touching point. Some people say it is at the end of the nostril, of the right nostril or left nostril. Some people say it is on the top of the lip. So this is also one particular point to make sure my mind is now with the breath. Let me touch it. The last and the most important and most technical point is, if you are sharp observant, if you are very vigilant, you can see the in-breath experience is not exactly like out-breath experience. Out-breath experience is not exactly like in-breath experience. So that the delimited characteristics, the discrimination between the in-breath and out-breath, the moment you are going to discern, now you are progressing. This is a very good sign to say, now when the in-breath happens, you are verily knows that I am with the in-breath, and equally you know it is not out-breath, it is not a sound, it is not a pain, it is not a thought. And immediately go to the out-breath, then immediately you know, now I am with the out-breath. These are the intrinsic personal characteristics of the outbreath, which I am very well knows it is not in-breath. It is not any other distraction. So how much you can keep this in-breath to outbreath, outbreath to in-breath changes. And even though it is the phases are changing, if the mindfulness is continuous, then you can say you can got the touch. Or you can isolate the touch of the breath from the sounds, pain and the thoughts. So that means we, in the meditation jargon, we say, we can keep the breath face to face. So when you are keeping like that, now that particular bhikkhu's instruction become very specific, that he says, see the beginning and the end of the touch. The beginning of the in-breath touch, end of the in-breath touch. Beginning of the out-breath touch, beginning of the end of the out-breath touch. That indicates, without that kind of a specific observation, we only see the middle of the in-breath, middle of the out-breath, that is the very cross part, that if you know bell-shaped curve, if you get the population of the classroom and by the age or weight or whatever may be, if you put into a graph, naturally it represents bell-shaped curve. The middle area is the average child in the class. And there are two tail ends. There are specific cases. Very too old or too young boys still in the same class. Or too tall or too short people, too heavy, very heavy people, very thin people go to the tail ends. Now the secret is, the Buddha says, go to the tail end. With the breath also becoming like a bell-shaped curve, you can feel the tip of it, if at all. That once starting from that, lower down your sensitivity, lower down your vigilance, lower down your diligence to see the unseen part or tail ends, and when you are doing it, a huge kind of a training, it is not moral training, it comes under either concentration training or wisdom training, but the way I am explaining is more biased to wisdom training. You try to see. It is like as if an archaeologist going to find an artifact or specific archaeological interesting, you start kind of digging down. Like that you hit the top. And when you are hitting, if you understand this is experience is the word that I have to see, then you have to dig in down. The beginning part is the Buddha says most welcome into the beginner's mind. So they are all see the in-breath, how does it start, from where does it start, and likewise when you go more and more deep into this beginning side, your sensitivity, your mindfulness, your vigilance, your diligence and your understanding of the breath and the face-to-face time period and the distance between the observing mind and the observed object become closer and closer and closer. So this is the way you rejuvenate your mind, you mobilize your energies and make it more immediate, and you find the journey. It is called penetrating into the very object. So therefore this object that the Buddha recommended is repetitive object. Breath is ever happening. Each and every time you try to see a very subtle start as much as possible, and through the middle and to the end, the disappearing part, the tapering off part. If you are managed, whenever you can manage to see how the out-breath is disappearing and the next in-breath is starting, you may find, whether you like it or not, there's a gap you can't perceive. End of the out-breath and the beginning of in-breath, always with a black box, a dark hole, a blind spot. Even if you become an arahant, you see the gap is there. But if your mind is not much trained, the gap is very big. But more and more you train, you are becoming more sharp enough to understand the gap. And you understand it's impossible, but you have to accept this as a black hole. This as a black box. This as a blind spot. And in order to see, isolate, discriminate, discern, this one, you have to see the last, after the last drop of outbreath, and be so vigilant, so prepared, so instructed about the oncoming in-breath. So when you come up to that level, it's like as if you are walking on a tightrope and you are in the middle. Imagine if someone is going to hit the rope. You are going to get the full thorough shake. Get a shot, either if you are in a, such a calibration, if a sound going to come and hit on your eardrum, you will be shaken, you will be frightened, because you can't maintain this subtle balance and listening sounds. Whenever the pain going to happen, or thought going to, everything is becoming so and so, so much so sensitive. So more and more you go down, deep layers, your synchronization, balancing, efficiency, sensitivity, day by day increasing. So when you go there, you will understand, in order to say that you have a clear vision, in order to have, you have a broader view, in order to have, you have a correct view, or to say radical kind of reflection, you must accept how much the surveillance, how much the vigilance, how much the diligence, there's a black hole. That very understanding is not disproving your vision. It says it is the truth. Whatever the continuity of the observation, there's a gap, there's a black hole. So, very understand, to understand that at the beginning, you have to have a notion, so much I have seen, but I know my observation is not complete. Even now it is not complete, but you are ready to accept there is a part impossible. Impossible to look into, impossible to see. Of course you can look into, but you can't see. So if you are sharp, reducing the increase in this kind of efficiency, and if you are not violating with hitting on the rope, I mean that is so much of sounds coming and bombarding, kind of thing, you can calibrate, you can synchronize into very subtle balance. When that happens, ultimately you will complain not only the gap between out-breath and in-breath. Now total breath disappeared, you are in a total gap. You can't feel, no in-breath, no out-breath, everything disappeared. And can someone still maintain the integrity? Can someone maintain the peace of mind? Can someone accept this as something natural happening under one's nose? Never. It never happens. Our mind becomes so nauseating. Our mind becomes so sleepy. Our escapism. Our mind becomes so bored, so monotonous, so outcasted, so fearful, so uncertain. So therefore, when and where you go to this subtle state, that your fear of freedom, or fear of unknown, the fear of new, is become your main enemy. Still if you wish to go, the Buddha says, human mind is prepared, if you go prepared. Human mind is potential one. It has all the capacity, but you have to go prepared. This is the journey we are tracing. So one day when you are in a such a deep calibration, deep balancing, you can see still the breath is happening, but we can't perceive. Otherwise we have to die. We are not dead. Experience is there. Like that, if you go to the seashore and see the breaking waves, you can calculate number of waves and the height and everything. But if you look at the horizon, you feel like no waves. It's like a straight line. But you know, even at the horizon level, waves are there, but a long distance, when the water becomes very profound, the water becomes very deep, it appears like a flag. Likewise, the breath, when it is mind is untrained, the beginning is like a breaking waves. When you go deeper and deeper into that, the waves are there, they are not breaking. And more you go to the depth, it appears like a flag. Then you develop as if, am I going to die? No breathing? I can't discriminate in breath and out breath. I can't feel at all. So this is how you block yourself at the inward journey. So that is why this particular monk, Sakat monk, is telling. If you are to see the beginning and the end of any touching sensation, now we are talking about the touch of the breath on your sensitivity of the body. More and more you go there, you will see the mystics or mystery or subsurface or unconscious. What is happening underneath? So more and more you go there, your understanding, your experience is applicable exactly to what is happening at the scene, what is happening at the hearing, smelling, touching, and the mind objects. So, but before going into that kind of a diversification, you have to master it for a long time, and then you will master the same when you are in the breathing, or inside in-breath and out-breath mindfulness. So how the sounds come and disturb you and get out. How the pains come and disturb you and get out. How the thoughts come and go out. So each and everyone has a beginning, the middle, the end. The same very understanding if we apply to these distractions, they are also going to teach yet another side of the same tapestry. So more and more vibrate, diversify. And when you go to the walking meditation, you are working with open eye. Sounds are there, birds are flying, winds blowing, but still you try to keep mindfulness. When you go back home, so much of activity, each and every activity, each and every phenomena, each and every experience at the beginning, the middle and the end. So select whichever may be possible, prominent, at least one thing at a time and that done well, principle, at least see any distraction or any peaceful event at the beginning, the middle and the end. Each and every time you are meditating, even though you are not in the Saint Benedict retreat center and the conference hall, you will be at home, you will be in the toilet, so you will be in the other room. But if you manage to see the beginning, the middle and the end of that event, you are full-fledged meditating. But you see the difference, how much it is difficult for bring this sitting cushion experience back to the home. Very difficult, but it's possible. But before stopping the talk, I would like to say, even though these first monks answering, when and where you go to the the contact, the beginning, the middle, and the end, in terms of six sense points, contact points, the questioning monkey is not happy. He says, I'm unhappy. And then he goes to another monk and says, what is the way, what is the way of vision that to be have the well-purified vision? The second monk says, when and where you are going to have graspings, holdings, if you can see the beginning, the middle and the end of each and every holding, every grasping, that is also a way out to understand, a way out to increase your the vision. That's called broader vision. That's called correct view. So, to go into that, when and where the experience going to happen, seeing, hearing, smelling, touching. Up to the point of contact, it is a possibility. All the possibilities are there. Whenever the contact going to happen, the one possibility become reality, others become nullified. Moment you try to see, the seeing becomes so much influential, you become a seer. And what you see become your main attraction, you hold into that, grasp into that. You don't know, you have to forego sounds at that time. You have to forego smell at that time. You have to forego taste at that time. You have to forego touching at that time. Skin touch, bodily tactile sensation. To forego mental object. So much you hold, grasp into seeing, visual objects, by tackling one, by holding one, you are foregoing sight. So therefore, even though you say, I see it under my very eyes, to understand, you see only 1/6 of the phenomenon. The opportunity to hear it, opportunity to smell it, taste it, touch it, and mental aspect, everything you sacrifice by understand by giving the consent to see. Not only that, you are so quickly grasping what we have seen, and you will fight and say, I am going to give you an eyewitness, I saw it, you can't deny it, that I saw is the truth. Of course it is true, but only the problem is it is partial. So therefore the instruction is, whenever you are holding the seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, to understand each and every time you are going to select one, reject many, each and every selection has five facets. That phenomena has the mental aspect and the physical aspect. Which way we are adjusted to into two, divided into two. And the physical part we call rupa, or materiality, corporeality, something concrete. But the mental part, you are the feeling side, perception side, mental formation side, and the consciousness. Each and everyone you hold it as a one single unit. But then and there only they come into being. Collapse into this materiality and mentality due to your selection, due to your understand your contact, and immediately they become something to be grasped. So the Buddha or his disciple or his teacher's teaching is to say, when and where such a thing happen, if you can understand how this possibility become a reality, to see that you have to right at the beginning. Once it is come up to a certain maturity, situation become revealed. It will become camouflaged. It will become makeup. So you have to go to the right from the beginning. So therefore, when and where this grasping, holding, happen, they are so intrinsic, they are so electric, they are so improvised, impromptu. So when and where happening, you must have so much of mindfulness as and when it arises to see. When the seeing happened, how I admire what I have seen, shape or the manner. How I am going to be sensitive to that or feel it is a good thing or bad thing. Or you are going to have a memory of that to remind it and tomorrow. So if it is a bad thing to get it off, some kind of a see a signal and labeling and kind of thing. Or how you are going to manipulate in order to get more pleasure or to reduce samadhi is going to give a bad pleasure, and that the mind is going to say good and the bad, left and the right, correct and wrong, all the kind of thing happen. So therefore, how much preparedness, how much vigilance you must have to at least to understand they are not already there. When and where contact going to happen, the possibilities become a kind of a reality. And if you're going to attach into that, you will never see the mechanism. If you wish to see the mechanism, you have to let it happen and try to see as and when it arises. And the thing is, if you are to see the phenomenon, the experience, as and when it to arise, when and where you become successful, you can't entertain it. You can't taste it. Because mind is now back to the mechanism rather than seeing the yellow color, blue color, admirable, nothing. You can see how the seeing takes place at your eye, how the hearing takes place. So that is why even though it is possible, our greedy mind, our gratifying mind is not appreciated. So therefore, they are also the same. As and when the gratification, as and where the holding, grasping happens, if you are sharp enough to see how it then and there arises, soon it happens how we grasp them and claim this me, mine, myself. Instead, if you can see it as if someone else, that is the way to see things, or we can say see things as they are, or to develop a kind of a well purified vision. So then only you can understand if you do not have such a mechanism, when we are in the day-to-day see, how much little fraction we see and how much we are claiming, telling that I saw it under my very nose and that I witness and kind of thing, that your arrogance and to necessity to prove is due to your partial see. If you have the well understood, well purified, well disciplined view, and nothing to prove. You are well contented by seeing itself. It's a satisfaction itself. So that is why the world is so much of vision. So therefore, the mindfulness, the simple tool, once developed, you can use in a multivarious ways, just diversified ways. So therefore, in this retreat, what we are going to do is at our best to develop the mindfulness, and later it will slowly, slowly go into diversification, either by six contact dose or by our gratification, as this place is going to expand further. And a lot of other ways, other viewpoints going to happen, and leave it aside. We will leave it for the moment for the tomorrow day after talk. And with that remark, I would like to sum up today's talk. Thank you very much for listening.